Kia ora, welcome to episode 54 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
Another great week for news from a galaxy far, far away, so let's jump in and talk Star Wars. First up in our news roundup, it's fun to be able to start talking about The Acolyte and in particular casting information. It's been revealed, not officially yet, but via a number of different sources before it came out through Variety.com, that Amandla Sternberg will have a lead role in The Acolyte. Now, I still don't know a lot about The Acolyte, but it's fun to sort of be moving into this space where we can have this sort of conversations. Amandla has had a number of roles over the sort of recent years, but we kind of probably most know them as playing Rue in The Hunger Games, which we recently watched on Netflix. So that's a fun announcement that it's somebody that we recognise, and hopefully we'll hear more about their character and other involvement moving forward. Just on the topic of The Acolyte, just a reminder that the official description for The Acolyte says that this takes place in the final days of the High Republic era. We know that that's about two centuries after the sort of current active stories of the High Republic novels and comics, and right before the fall of the Jedi era, which incidentally is around the time of Dooku's childhood. So there's some interesting sort of bits and pieces in terms of milestones and the continuity around this point in time. We don't know a lot about it beyond the implications of this concept of the Acolyte, but I think moving forward we're going to see a little bit more interaction between the High Republic material, an upcoming game called Star Wars Eclipse, which we'll talk about very shortly, and the Acolyte. So I think there's going to be an interesting blend of this pre-prequel sort of continuity. Now, the other big thing that's been quite visible since we had our last podcast is a couple of teasers for the Book of Boba Fett. Counting down just over 2 weeks until the Book of Boba Fett screens on Disney Plus on December the 29th. The first teaser, well, there's been a couple of teasers actually, but the first one that came out since we last spoke in the podcast was later last week, called The Return. This one had quite a lot of new material in it. In particular, we saw swoop bikes with Nikto on board. Interesting to see that style of swoop bike come into play. We saw some Tatooine streets with additional types of speeders, some land speeder type speeders, but some also sort of, maybe think of Vespa, some brightly colored blue, red, and chrome sort of speeders. So some interesting new styles and designs there. And there's a very fun, what seems to be a flashback scene, but it's interesting to see the sort of way that this played out, because there's a flashback scene that shows Boba Fett, Temuera Morrison, in just his overalls, so before he's acquired any sort of covering or armor, so pretty fresh from whatever has taken place since the Return of the Jedi. And there's a little bit of suggestion that this might even be in a place that is, in fact, Toshi Station or something like Toshi Station, because people have tried to match up the background and even some of the characters to the deleted scenes from Star Wars A New Hope. So there might be a connection there, or it might just be referencing existing material in terms of set decoration, but it's fun either way that they're going to that level of detail in terms of making this feel like the Tatooine we know. This was followed up just today by another teaser, which is just called Ready. And that word kind of implies, you know, are we getting ready? Are you ready for the release of Boba Fett coming out very soon? This subsequent teaser didn't have quite as much new material, but each iteration of these really feels like it is adding to the hype, building the hype, and we're super excited for it. And that just seems to be the general consensus across the internet.
Yeah, it's only like a few days now. We're counting down those final days. Obviously, it would be fun to sort of have it pre-Christmas, but this is definitely something to look forward to just after Christmas. I hope that if any of you are heading away, that you'll be able to watch these episodes while on holiday. That'll be a fun little bonus. I'm super excited to finally get stuck into it. I hope that these are reasonable lengths. I know every now and again with some of the Mandalorian episodes, they kind of trend a little closer to half an hour. Like, no, we've got to get up into sort of a high 40, nearly 50 minutes. So here's hoping that because this is a slightly less episode number for the Book of Boba Fett, that they're a good meaty length in terms of runtime. But I'm really, really excited. These trailers are definitely getting me amped.
Yeah, well, some of the episodes, the recent episodes of the live action Hawkeye series on Disney Plus were a little bit longer, weren't they? So there is precedent for them to do the longer episodes. And as you say, we believe this is going to be a 7-episode series, so slightly shorter than what we've seen with Mandalorian, which means they may cram a little bit more into each episode. One other conversation that I've seen online that's just a little bit interesting to contemplate, I kind of like the idea that this is looking like it's going to have a little bit of a different feel to The Mandalorian. Obviously, all of these current and upcoming live-action series are going to have a bit of interaction and a bit of relationship between characters because they're taking places in similar spaces on the timeline. But I kind of want The Book of Boba Fett to not feel like The Mandalorian Season 2.5. It'd be nice if it has its own feel, even if it references characters and events from The Mandalorian. And one aspect of this that I've seen discussed is the relationship to recent comics from Marvel, in particular the Bounty Hunters, War of the Bounty Hunters comics, and the Crimson Rain comics, which of course explore the criminal underworld, the dark side of, or that dark side of the galaxy in particular. So there may be characters, events, organizations that are set up in those comics that are quite strongly referenced in the Book of Boba Fett, and I think that's going to be a really interesting tie-in and really set the tone in a way that distinguishes it from The Mandalorian. I'm looking forward to that with a bit of luck. Okay, we recently had to report that the Auckland Armageddon, which would have been taking place this coming weekend, was cancelled. But about a week after that was announced, Armageddon came up with a new revelation that they would in fact be having two Auckland Armageddon events in 2022 for a total of 6 Armageddon events around the country in 2022. We think this is really exciting news and a good opportunity to sort of celebrate sci-fi and other pop culture, costuming, and with a bit of luck, some actual Star Wars theming associated with it. So in winter, June the 10th to the 12th, there will be a winter Auckland Armageddon, and then in spring, in the usual Labour weekend slot, there will be the standard spring Auckland Armageddon in addition to the other Armageddon events around the country. I'll just read what the organisers of Auckland Armageddon have said about these two events, because there's a little bit of a different theme to each of them and it's interesting. So for the winter, June the 10th to 12th event, they say, as we dive into winter, we bring a new life to the Auckland Armageddon Expo you all know and love. This event will be focusing on gaming and esports with the country's largest gaming tournament ever. This will be open to all ages and will feature streamer hosts and special events. They'll also be hosting a bunch of in-person animation voice actors and have several special anime-focused events and activities, as well as large displays unlike anything ever seen at Armageddon. That displays comments is interesting because even though we didn't really get to the point of getting a lot of detail, we knew there were going to be some life-size pod races at the Auckland Armageddon event that was due to take place. So hopefully that will just roll over and we will see these in spring of next year. We don't have a lot of information of that at hand, but we're hoping that it will be some really fun photo opportunities. So for spring, in October the 21st to 24th, the Armageddon Expo event, the information we have about this on hand so far is also interesting. This year will be their 27th year of running New Zealand's biggest pop culture event, and they say they want to make this one as epic as possible. It'll be the Orkgeddon you're familiar with, but on a much grander scale. They plan to bring back in-person celebrity guests for the first time in 3 years, and they'll have a focus on anime with lots of incredible gaming events. This will be the biggest gaming setup for the year, featuring all types of content to blow your mind and entertain. So certainly exciting to start to be thinking about in-person celebrities again. It has been a while, and there's opportunities for a few Kiwis to be showing up as Star Wars representatives. Hopefully we'll see that sort of thing taking place in October of next year.
Yeah, obviously fans are disappointed that Auckland Armageddon couldn't go ahead this weekend, but I like their sort of backup plan that they've come up with. So we miss out. So technically it's not really sort of fully cancelled. It's just bumped to June next year, which is a nice, safe, push it off into the future type thing.
They made the right call, frankly, because yes, Auckland won't be moving into orange until later in December, so beyond yes, that point. So it was a hard decision to make, but transpires that it was the right one.
Yes, yeah. So based on these descriptions, I mean, Auckland Armageddon's held in the biggest venue of them all. You know, it's the big event. It's the one where fans from around the country come to travel to attend panels, virtual or in person, the cosplay, the shopping, sort of the fan community. And like last year, we even had the sort of Lego exhibit off in the separate hall as in sort of conjunction. So you got that to enjoy as well. There was some great Star Wars Lego displays in there. So I'm really looking forward to next year. Obviously, international travel is probably not really on the cards for a lot of us due to the complexities there at the moment. So I'm really looking forward to having lots of home events to look forward to, whether you're attending in person or following along the excitement online, looking at photos from people that went. We're certainly going to hope to try to get to a few of these and be taking all the photos. So it's going to be a fun year next year.
Okay, we want to talk about a surprise reveal, the trailer for the future release Star Wars Eclipse game. This is a very grand cinematic trailer for a game we're not expecting to see for a couple of years yet. It's still described as being in early development, but the trailer is obviously very fully formed. is a game that will probably be coming out possibly as late as 2024, maybe late 2023, but we're expecting 2024 rather than getting our hopes up too much, so a little way away just yet. Do have to just pause and note this game is coming from a company called Quantic Dreams, and we're fully aware that the CEO of Quantic Dreams, David Cage, has a little bit of a unpleasant history. Won't go into it in a lot of detail here, but it is worth being aware of that because it does make it a little bit difficult to have conversations about this in a fully excited way. If you want to find out more, just search David Cage and Quantic Dreams and you'll get all the information pretty clearly because there's a lot of conversations about it on the internet. But putting that aside and just talking about the pure Star Wars content here, this is a game that's described as an action-adventure game. It may be a little bit different from some of the other Quantic Dreams games in the way it pans out. A little bit of a role-playing aspect, probably not open world or MMO. Not clear about the full structure and gameplay style yet, but you will get to play a few different characters as you navigate an adventure that's taking place during the era of the High Republic, but in the outer rims of the galaxy. So presumably that just gives a little bit more freedom in terms of navigating other canon events. But like I say, very polished, very exciting, very sort of hype-worthy trailer, over 2 minutes in duration, and lots and lots to sort of see and digest from there.
It's really exciting to see trailers like this kind of drop unexpectedly. Obviously, there was a lot of sort of underground chatter that there was a game in development, but I always kind of hold my breath because that's happened a lot over the years. You know, we knew about Star Wars 1313. We've known about these sort of untitled projects being done and then being shelved for one reason or another. So I wasn't putting too much stock into rumors until I saw a formal announcement, and this was definitely a way to really get people excited. It's a very slick trailer. I saw a lot of commentary saying that it reminded them of the Star Wars The Old Republic cinematic trailers, that really sort of high definition cinema quality computer generated graphics. It looks amazing. It's got a sort of a really interesting music over it, a drum beat that sort of really builds up. It's definitely one to check out. There's so many little details in it. Obviously, it's a little bit hard to sort of figure out too much. We're getting all sorts of bits and pieces. It's just generally the sort of the vibe of the current events in the galaxy where this game takes place. It doesn't really sort of pull out too many major characters. No, we don't see any actual gameplay in this trailer. No. So
it's scene setting. But yeah. And the characters we see, no one knows who they are. There's just no connection to any other material at this point. There's a female that we're presuming is a Jedi. There's a sinister looking character emerging from Black Ooze, who may or may not be an adversary of some sort. There are a few recognizable elements which are fun to really sort of hook it into the Star Wars feel. It looks like we may be visiting planets that may be Kashyyyk or Naboo, or at least planets similar to both of those. And what we do see is a bunch of Trade Federation Lucra Hulks and landing crafts. The Lucra Hulk class battleships are the ones that we saw in The Phantom Menace, of course, the large droid control ships. And even though this takes place some time before the Phantom Menace, we know the history of those kind of interesting because the Trade Federation, before it built a military force, was a Trade Federation. So these Lucra Hulk crafts are enormous cargo haulers that were modified during the time of the Phantom Menace. So they have a longevity in terms of continuity. They've been around for hundreds of years. There's some interesting goings on related to those. We see a few species that we are familiar with. We see an interesting looking protocol droid. We see lightsabers and lightsaber fights. And one thing that really kind of stood out, a few people have talked about this, is that amongst the sort of hustle and bustle of this sort of market scene that we see, where there's a Mon Calamari wandering around and a Duros character, is a number of representatives of different force religions that were established in Star Wars Rogue One as being occupants of Jeddah. So we see Disciples of the Wills, Cultists of the Central Isopta, and Turibota, all quite recognizable characters in specific garbs and headwear. So it kind of implies that as well as Jedi and Sith, there's other sort of conversations and events related to different groups, different sects, and the way they interpret the Force. And I think that's going to be quite an interesting exploration.
I always like the way that the Force tends to get a little bit more explored in depth in some of the video games. You know, video games come up with some really interesting Force powers to kind of make things really interesting, sort of above and beyond what we often see in the movies. And I know for the sake of video games, these are often sort of exaggerated or amplified beyond what we ever see in the movies, because you want to feel powerful when you play these games. So things are sort of, you know, force push and pull and lightning all tend to be sort of amped up. But the appearance of these sort of force religions in this game and the sort of the ominous character that we see towards the end, I'm really intrigued by what that could possibly mean, whether we see sort of a little bit more sort of exploration with that.
Yeah,
it's a really interesting element.
Yeah. So just in terms of tying all the threads together, you know, the High Republic era concludes, wraps up about 50 years before the Phantom Menace, the events of the Phantom Menace movie. There's speculation and or presumption that this Star Wars Eclipse video game and maybe the Acolyte, they're actually taking place in the latter days of the High Republic, so presumably almost certainly closer to the prequels than the current High Republic novels and comics and so forth. So I think that we're going to sort of see a little bit of pulling together of material related to the High Republic and this game, Star Wars Eclipse, and some relationship potentially to the Acolyte, because they are sort of occupying the same points in time on the timeline. It'll be interesting to see what sort of overlap and sort of real world building related to that era is going to take place between these different elements.
I think it was almost a little bit of a misstep, seeing as these things are kind of the prequels to the prequels, as it were. I think it was a missed opportunity to kind of announce a series, a video game, at the same time as the big High Republic launch.
They didn't do it at the same time.
Yeah, when they announced the High Republic, they're kind of building it up, and then when it came out that it was going to be books and comics, I know a lot of Star Wars fans just kind of like, check out, it feels like too much homework. The books and comics end up being a really sort of complicated web, and it's a little bit tricky to sort of figure out where to start, what order do you read these in. So a lot of people are just like, okay, you know, I'll just go to like Wikipedia and like read the summary just to kind of get it. But if they had announced a live action series or even an animated series and a big video game all at the same time, I think people would have been a little bit more on board with this whole sort of project, this new era, and would have sort of jumped in and go, well, maybe I do want to read a book, and maybe I do want to read some of the comics, because they tie in to this same timeline. If they were going to do a live action series and a detailed video game set in the same series, that should have been part, like, even if they didn't know too much of the details, when they launched High Republic, they could have said, you know, we're starting with books, we're starting here, and soon down the road there's going to be a live action series, there's going to be a video game,
so
start here at the start when things aren't too complicated, read the first book that comes out and follow along.
The rumors that Quantic Dreams was going to be doing a High Republic era video game have been around for a while now. We didn't need to have a trailer for that tie-in to be announced. It could have just come alongside the conversations about the Lucas publishing materials. So yeah, I mean, because it's just inevitable that we think about the precedent set by Shadows of the Empire, which was a multimedia between movie story arc that involved books, video games, comics, action figures, even a music soundtrack. And it was easy to consume. There were lots of little bits and pieces, but you knew how it fit together. I mean, I don't mind a complex story, but I don't love having to really struggle to work out how to source all the different materials in order to get a complete picture of the story. So there is a way, you know, there is a wrong way to do things in terms of making it overly complex to work out which comics to read in which order and which novels to read in which order and how they necessarily relate together. It could have been something on Disney Plus, animated or live action, that is just a little bit of an overview that establishes the main characters of the High Republic novels. You know, we had a conversation prior to this podcast about how in Star Wars Visions, there were a couple of instances where relationships between masters and apprentices were sort of set up without necessarily embroiling themselves in the complexities of the bigger picture of the galaxy. They were just simple tasks that were being undertaken that really sort of did set a scene and tell a story, and they could have done that with some of the key characters of the High Republic that would have just given people a taster and an introduction.
Because the High Republic's about sort of the heyday of the Jedi, when they weren't fighting wars like in the Clone Wars. They were just, you know, master and apprentices being sent off to some planet to solve a dispute, to settle the peace. You know, they are keepers of the peace, you know, so as you mentioned in Visions, the episode The Elder, where we see a master and apprentice checking out, you know, something a little bit unknown, you know, and ultimately, you know, having a lightsaber battle. But that's exactly the sort of thing that they could have done as like a little short form animated series. You could pick random master and apprentice team ups. They could go to a different planet each episode, different characters, you know.
It doesn't have to be prolonged. It's just about establishing that relationship and giving someone familiarity with the characters so that they're more tempted, more enticed to, you know, pick up a novel and read it as in more complex story unfolds, because obviously the High Republic Phase 1 is getting into quite a complex story with interaction with the Nihil Marauders and, you know, big galactic level events.
I know that if you're really into books, you can dive into anything and get straight into it. I know that for a lot of Star Wars fans, if you're primarily in it for the movies and the live action and even the animated series, if the book doesn't have a character or a hook that you're familiar with, it can get a little bit hard to kind of get into all these new characters, figuring out who everybody is, and especially that this is a completely new timeline period, starting with simple sort of text books where you're like, okay, is this a new species? And I'm not really sure what they look like. There's all these different people, you know, you don't really know what the ships look like and stuff like that. And so you're like, okay, so now I've got to jump across and start going into all the comics. And that's, you know, a little bit more homework. I think it would have just made it so much easier for this new generation of fans that doesn't come with a huge sort of history of having read all the books, read all the comics, you know, done all the kind of expanded universe sort of knowledge absorption. The newer generation of Star Wars fans don't know all of that. So they could have made it really easy for people to dive on board. Yeah, and I'm glad that they're finally doing this. Yeah. You know, we're getting a video game, we're getting a live action series that kind of ties into it, but it would have been so much easier if they'd just done it from the start.
Yeah, so it may be indirect relationships between the Eclipse game, the Acolyte, and the High Republic published material, maybe indirect, but it's still going to be worthwhile, and I am looking forward to that little bit of interaction. I don't expect to be spoon-fed every single bit of information in the Star Wars continuity, but I think if you make it a little bit easier for fans, then you'll get more fans interacting with it.
And
I
think and that's more fans buying the books and buying the comics, you know?
So a little bit of a wait before Star Wars Eclipse comes out, or before we probably even hear a lot more about it, because it's, as we say, in quite early development. Not clear exactly what that means. They must have some hint of this, you know, the storytelling, but obviously a branching story that involves decision making, and it's going to be quite complex to make sure everything's ironed out and working and functioning. But look forward to talking about that down the line.
Just as a little quick update about another Star Wars video game, Galaxy of Heroes, the app game that's available on iOS and Android, has done the next sort of progression in the big Starkiller Galactic Legend update. So now we have in the game all four characters that will be required to level up to be able to unlock the Starkiller event. You can see the countdown in game for the Starkiller event. It's very, very exciting. So now finally in the game, we have the four expanded universe sort of classic characters. We have Dash Rendar, Karl Katarn, Darth Talon, and finally Mara Jade. And she is looking like a really good addition. I'm very, very excited. She's an awesome character from the original Timothy Zahn Thrawn trilogy books. She's a beloved character, so it's really fun to have her in the game.
In the continuity, Mara Jade transitions from being the Emperor's Hand to being a sort of light side character, but in the game,
she's the Emperor's Hand. She specifically has the title Mara Jade, the Emperor's Hand.
So she is
a dark side aligned character, which I kind of like, you know, because that's how we first meet her. It's her sort of classic appearance. Obviously, it's amazing where her character story progressed in those books, but I do kind of love her in her classic black outfit being aligned with the Sith, so it's really fun. I'm definitely keen to work on gearing those characters up because they're fun additions to my collection.
Okay, before we wrap up news announcements and move up into product announcements and store reports, I just wanted to mention the Galactic Star Cruiser again, because since the last podcast, something that's kind of leaked, because it's something that's been sent directly to people who have paid to attend this role-playing hotel two-day stay, and that is that a welcome video that all people who have bookings with the Galactic Star Cruiser have sort of received. And we've had some conversations about the missteps that the marketing group for the Galactic Star Cruiser have taken in the last couple of weeks, and this feels like another one. The welcome video features a character against a pretty bland backdrop, presenting a pretty cheesy summary of what to expect when you're on the Star Cruiser. The character is named Indario Zinn. She is a Chandrila Starline representative, and the whole thing has sort of been described as feeling like it's come out of a 1990s CD-ROM game. It's pretty lightweight and pretty weak in a way that's not nostalgic or not entertaining or humorous or sort of throwback. It's not ironic.
It seems like a funny misstep. I understand them doing... The character has purple skin and a few sort of tattoo details. I understand in the actual hotel, keeping the alien cast members a little on the minimal side. You know, they don't want to go through huge big latex prosthetics. But for a published video where this person is not going to be seen in the hotel, or at least there doesn't seem to be any indication of that. So they could have done something really, really cool with, you know, full-on latex headpieces, different eyes.
Star Tours videos have had all sorts of species, Wookiees and yes. Mon Calamari and all sorts of, in a very fun way. But this felt just a little bit flat. The background was flat. The tech that she was holding in her hand for a hologram projector was...
It literally looks like an iPhone just turned upside down, and that the holo projector is coming out of the flashlight turned on her iPhone, and people are sort of pointing out, like, they're trying to wow people and make sure that they don't cancel their bookings, because that's the other point, is that previously people would scroll through the days that are available and it was all booked out for about a good 6 months. And now, as these sorts of, controversies are sort of cropping up with what the stuff actually looks like in these teasers, several dates have now opened up for bookings, which can only mean that people are cancelling.
Yeah, we're coming up on the 90-day cancellation limit. So people are realising if they're going to cancel, it's now or never. If they don't cancel now, they'll be stuck with losing a deposit or whatever. So there are slots opening up for the very early bookings, a bit very early flights, because people are cancelling. They are being rebooked. They are being taken up again. So it's unlikely that we'll have, you know, completely empty ones. But people are changing their minds based on the material that's coming out. Now, as we said before, we're not trying to bag on this. We don't enjoy being negative about Star Wars content. We want this to succeed. But the missteps and the corners that have been cut are a little bit curious. And we'll wait and see, you know, after the first few groups of people have gone through it all to really make an interpretation and a judgment of it all. But I think it's fair to say, even if it ends up being really, really well done, that the marketing to date has just been a little bit underwhelming and a little bit confusing in terms of why they've taken some of the paths that they've taken.
Yeah, I see all sorts of discussions in the YouTube comments, some of people sort of dissecting these videos. Some people are like, why didn't they just use the established Star Tours idea? You know, there's already sort of a visual feel to Star Tours that Disney Park guests and Star Wars fans are quite familiar with on the whole. It would have fit if this was just like a bigger version of a Star Tours kind of spacecraft. Or, you know, why didn't they just do original trilogy so you could have like Vader coming to go check on board and sort of march down the hallways and stuff like that. There could have been some really fun ideas taking some sort of existing things that were already there rather than trying to create this whole new original thing.
Yeah. Well, there was a Facebook live stream recently where a lot of people who had bookings actually sort of got together and had conversations about it and were still discussing what things they were looking forward to. And I think there are things to look forward to. And there's this notion that the role-playing aspect of it will be a little bit more thorough, a little bit more, you know, visible if there are cast members that are sort of helping you along, you know, along the way, sort of continuously through it. So there's still reasons to be a little bit hopeful for it, but some of the justifications for the marketing material that have been coming through, I just felt didn't really stand up either. This notion that, yeah, we haven't seen Galactic Star Cruisers in the Star Wars galaxy yet, and that's why the bridge of the ship looks different from things we've seen so far. I mean, yeah, sure, technically, but stop and think about it just for a second. If you want people to think of this as being a Star Wars-y experience, then don't use the excuse that this is a new thing in the Star Wars universe you haven't seen before. Use something that's recognisable and established.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Star Tours concept ties into that, as does, you know, any other actual recognisable elements. You've got to have those recognisable elements for people to enjoy it as a Star Wars experience. You can't get away with the excuse that this is just a part of Star Wars you haven't seen before.
Yeah. I know some people were sort of pointing out that they sort of were sort of celebrating the big itinerary. There were lots of things to do, but when you sort of broke it down, there was the lightsaber training, which, to be honest, looked a little underwhelming, especially for a generation of younger fans that would have grown up with some of the really cool VR games, really sort of action-packed video games. This is going to be a little bit slow-paced, unless there's like a expert mode on this thing. Then we have the deck, which is going to be a lot of people queuing up to pull the same levers and buttons, or unless it's going to be like one lucky kid gets chosen to pull the hyperspace lever and everyone else just watches. And then we only see concept art so far for the sort of holo card game. It's going to be really interesting to see if they reveal that before the launch, because we haven't seen anything of that room or how that's going to go down. And then of course we have the lounge bar that we saw in that video that was pulled down. And as people pointed out, there's one person singing and everyone else is probably drinking expensive cocktails that you have to pay for on top of the cost of the hotel. Generally speaking, wherever you go, alcohol's never included in the price. They will give you base drinks, and if you want alcohol and cocktails, wine, beer, that's always on top of the price. And you know that's the way it works at Disney. So everyone in that room, if you want to sit and relax, you know, it's like Ogre's Cantina. You know, you go in there to spend more money. And this is a pretty already expensive thing. So it's not really an activity. If you are spending money, it's essentially sort of shopping disguised as an activity.
Even wider than that, the how do you get a balance between role-playing for kids and role-playing for adults? Because they are two different things.
Yeah.
Quite, I think in many ways they require two different levels of detail and different styles, and just that balance is going to be, I mean...
The three-year-old will go up to Mickey thinking it's Mickey. The 30-year-old goes up to Mickey knowing it's a performer in a costume. You know, you play along because, you know, there are kids around and it's part of the Disney experience. You play along that these are the real characters and stuff like that. So how do you kind of keep that enthusiasm going without ever sort of breaking that illusion when it's supposed to be a complete immersion, no, you know, never breaking character.
Yeah, well, they can go to great lengths to make it feel realistic for adults, but trying to do that in parallel with kids and manage kids in the same space is
especially
be
if you have things like space battles. I don't know how they're going to do that on the bridge. You know, if you're going to like fool kids into thinking this is like semi-real, how do you make it like exciting and being bombed without freaking out the 2-year-old, you know?
It reminds me of the SNL skit where there's adult collectors and child collectors, and they have completely different perspectives on how you should be playing with toys.
Yeah.
And what is the definition of accuracy? Because, yeah, if you have kids just running around banging buttons and while they're flinging out joysticks, and then adults that want to get into the immersion and actually take things out and experience the content, you know, the progression of the storyline, those two things don't work together in the same space at the same time.
Yeah, so
we'll see. Yeah. We'll talk about this
it's definitely gonna be very, very interesting when those photos and the videos start coming out in March next year.
And hopefully they don't enforce restrictions on how much material can actually come out. I mean, obviously people can talk about and describe everything, but we should be able to see it. We want to be able to see it. Make sure there's
I'm
nothing hidden.
I'm sure somebody's going to try and sneak some cell phone footage if they don't allow cameras.
Yeah. I mean, if there is a true story arc that's going through the whole experience, and there are spoilers that you want to avoid being released, because that can really kill it if they're just out there in the wild. But we need to know more about how it's actually going to pan out. We want to see that once, you know, from people who have actually participated.
It is very hard for Disney to restrict that sort of thing, because while you can walk into a movie theater and they can take your phones off you, inside the Disney parks, you need your cell phone. They've built the whole sort of Fast Pass, well now Lightning Lane and Genie, everything is moving towards using your smartphone to, you know, buy food, order food, you know, secure your tickets for rides and things like that. They are leaning very, very heavily into it. So I don't think you can step onto Disney property and expect to be separated from your cell phone. You know, they give you alerts about like when you can go on Rise of the Resistance and stuff like that. The only way to get on Rise of the Resistance, you know, for the whole first year of its existence was to book basically on your phone. So the people at this hotel are going to go into the Disney parks. They're going to need their phones on them. So I think at least we'll get sneaky pictures.
Okay. It'll be interesting when we hear that material, but that's a good few months away. Yeah. So we'll see how that pans out. Okay, a few product announcements and local store reports, or in fact, most of what we're about to talk about qualify as local store reports, things that have been revealed or become available in New Zealand over the last week. Kmart has a very wide range of kids' clothing. They often have quite a lot of themed clothing in the kids' section in particular, but this is a wide range of nearly 20 different products, all priced in the $7 to $10 range, with fun, mostly Grogu-style, cartoony graphics and imagery, but a good range of kids clothing for all ages, starting from infants, newborns, in the $7 to $10 price range. And we've got that all covered and discussed on the SWJ website. As part of a recent Bring Home the Bounty week of reveals, there is a collaboration between Elements Skateboards and Star Wars. And those have actually started showing up in New Zealand. So via Empire Skate, you can get the Darth Vader 8-inch complete skateboard for $130. You can get that via the market or direct via Empire Skate. And a couple of other smaller retailers, Dreamtime Surf, we've noticed, have actually got a few others from the range. The Stormtrooper, the Yoda, the Boba Fett, and that aforementioned Darth Vader 8-inch complete Star Wars skateboard. These are quite fun collectibles. We haven't had a lot of the previous Star Wars collaborations with Element skateboards make their way into New Zealand with decent distribution. So it's nice to see those being made available. The Darth Vader one is my favourite so far, and that seems to be the one that's going to be stocked by the most people because of its presumed popularity. A couple of new products showing up at EB Games. In the Gaming's Great Black Series 6-inch line, an Imperial Senate Guard figure from The Force Unleashed, priced at $59. That's a price increase over the standard Black Series because of the exclusivity of this figure, but if you're collecting the Gaming Greats, EB Games has that in stock now online and in stores. Also at EB Games so far, but presumably we'll see it at a few other retailers as well, as the new Deluxe Boba Fett Black Series figure in his full Mandalorian, Ender Mandalorian, Starter Book of Boba Fett gear. A very cool figure. It comes in the Deluxe packaging because it has two guns, a removal helmet, and a jetpack. And consequently, it's priced a little bit higher. I think EB Games has that for $69 at the moment. But as we talked about last week, we're going to be suckers for this Temuera Morrison merch and probably going to want to get all of the Black Series representations of the different variations of Boba Fett, all the way from his first appearance on Tython and The Mandalorian through to whatever number of iterations we see in the Book of Boba Fett. Now, I think it's going to be quite fun to have those guys all lined up. Speaking of Boba Fett, from New Zealand Mint, Boba Fett's Fire Spray 31 Class Patrol and a Tech Craft, also known as Slave Run historically, a 1-ounce silver coin from New Zealand Mint is quite a cool new addition. This features colour imagery of the Starfighter set against a silver backdrop, and that is in stock and shipping now, priced at $164 for a 1-ounce silver coin from New Zealand Mint. Finally, a couple of new t-shirts showing up from Hellenstein Brothers. A Darth Vader I Am Your Father, which we've seen a good few times before in different iterations, but quite a cool comic cover style Grogu t-shirt, which is currently half price, $20, at Hellenstein Brothers, available online or in store in their licensed graphics t-shirt section. And that's about it for this installment. I guess we are done doing talking. If you have any thoughts on topics we discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. Leave a comment on the YouTube page or our website page for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We always appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week and every Tuesday. Don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Kia ora, kia noho, haumaru. Thank you for listening and stay safe.
Turo Hawaiki, may the force be with you.